Hey, it's Coach Sarah, and welcome to Range of Change, the podcast where we dive into the pivotal moments of transformation that shape our lives. If you're looking for inspiration, insights, and real talk about navigating change, big or small, you found the right place. I'm an ICF-certified coach and a seasoned change manager with 2 decades of experience helping people and organizations thrive through life's hairy moments. Whether you're choosing to make a bold leap into a new chapter of your life, or life is choosing it for you, this community will explore how to not just survive, but thrive through change. Think of this podcast as your guide to becoming more resilient, more empowered, and ready to take on your next big change with confidence. Chris, thank you so much for joining me on Range of Change. We're going to discuss a pivotal period in your life in college and some of the really impactful lessons that you learned then and you've carried forward throughout the rest of your life. But before that, I want to start with a question I try to ask everyone, just sort of a level set on how you deal with change in general. So let's imagine one day next week you open a door and there's a surprise party in your honor. Are you thrilled? Are you miserable? What's your reaction to that?
Oh, that's good. First, thank you for having me. A surprise party is no problem at all. That kind of change I love because there's no preparation and building up to an anxiety and I'm just going to stay home today and pretend I'm sick. So the surprise party sounds great. I love seeing all of my friends and having like a different amazing experience. It's everything that leads up to that that I can't stand and makes me never want to do anything ever. So if my whole life could be surprise party after surprise party, I would take it. That sounds fantastic. That's the change I like.
Interesting. That's so interesting. Because a lot of people, I mean, it's like there's no control there. So a lot of people hate those types of changes. But it sounds like you're good with no control. You just don't want to anticipate.
Yeah. I like the outcome and I like doing it. Like my wife plans all kinds of trips everywhere. And she's fantastic at it. And I don't really have to like worry about it. Even like when we went to Disney, she's made me my own little pamphlet of here's everything we're gonna do every day. And the doing it and like being there is no problem whatsoever. It's the planning and like, should I be helping more? Should I be helping less? What if this goes wrong? Like, what if I get lost and then the kids are stuck on a ride? Like, it's all of that. That's what I don't like about change. But doing the thing sounds great. I want a surprise party every day. I'm going to tell everyone from now on, just don't tell me ahead of time. Just show up. And then we'll figure it out in the moment. That sounds great.
I love it. I can't wait to show up at your next impromptu party. Just get a day and time in the mail. No details. All right. So we're going to set the stage for this story. We're going to go in the Wayback Machine to the glory days of the early 90s when you were in high school. So what was high school like for you in general?
So high school was fine because you have to go. And I accepted that. My younger sister was really good at everything. She was great at sports and had all the trophies and the awards and got straight A's. And things came, I think, really easily for her. She's a year and a half behind me. I guess like 2 years in school behind me. And everything for me at school was challenging. I got C's and some B's and some D's, but like mostly C's. So I was always kind of compared to people who had better grades. A lot of my friends were like in AP classes and they would tutor me. Like I always had math tutors. I always struggled with like everything academic. And I didn't care about sports. So she and I were very different, but that like growing up and being that close in age, everyone kind of compares you to each other. Yeah. So it was not comfortable. I mean, you don't realize like things are like uncomfortable or unhappy until you kind of look back or you've been through it for a long time. So it was fine. It was just not as easy as it seemed for a lot of other people, like academically, right? And I always had problems reading and studying and sticking to things for school and like preparing properly. And I remember like parents and teachers being like, "You're really smart. Just how come you're not getting it?" And I was like, I don't know why I'm not getting it. Like, how would I answer that? Right. So I think I understood some of that at the time. I understand it a lot better now, but I always felt like, well, how come these other people, it's no problem for them. And things just are easy for them where I have to struggle, right? So that's what high school was like. Thank you for bringing that up. It's a super comfortable conversation to have.
So I'm curious, like, were you ever resentful that it seemed like it was easier for other people, or were you, did you approach it with this kind of like, well, that's how it is. It's high school. I haven't thought that much about it.
Yeah, no, my parents were always like, well, you should read more. And I think I figured out later on, I had like a touch of dyslexia. So I'd like sit with a book and my sister would fly through books and my friends were reading like Of Mice and Men and all these other like advanced things. And I was just trying to like read any book and I just couldn't do it. And I didn't care. And I don't understand. And it honestly wasn't until I was like 25 that I read like a John Grisham book and something clicked. So like, it was a long time of like, well, books aren't for me, but that's a big part of being a kid and, you know, participating in school. So I don't think I was like resentful, but I was like, if they can do it, why can't I do it? I like lots of other things. I don't like books, but like, why can't I get into books, right? So like, that's just, I guess, one example of, I would look at other people having a not difficult time, like people that I shared a lot of interests and life with, and it was, it didn't click for me, and I didn't know how to make it click, right? But everyone told me like it should click. So I guess I never really like was angry or upset or like frustrated at that. I was more frustrated at myself that I couldn't maneuver to the end and get the thing that everybody else got. You know, I was always just kind of like stuck in the middle of the labyrinth and I was like, I guess this is where I'm going to be. It sounds like everybody's having a good time at the end, but I'm not, I'm just going to be in the middle for a while.
Yeah. It's interesting how you phrase that too, that like teachers would ask you what the problem was. Cause I feel like that was very typical of our upbringing, that we were so low on that labyrinth and it wasn't this idea that like a teacher ought to be guiding us through, like we were just there and we had to figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah, for sure.
So as you were, you know, contemplating going to college, was this daunting? Were you excited? I'm curious how, you know, someone who has so many interests is often interested in going off to college, but also with academic challenges might have made that more difficult.
I don't know. I think I was very comfortable, like in my house playing video games with my circle of friends, and like my sister was getting straight A's and looking at these colleges, and some of my friends went, like, we went and looked at Union College, and I was like, I'm not really sure why I'm looking at Union College with you. You probably can't get in. I don't know how I'm gonna get in. I think my parents were trying to figure out how to navigate that too. Like, I was the older kid, so I was the first one to figure that out. That like, well, they had to figure out like how do we shop for colleges? How do we gauge which one is right and isn't right? And the whole time I was like, yeah, this is fine. I guess I have to do this, but like, can I just stay home and play video games? There was not really like a, and I mean, I had jobs, like I worked and I made money and I had interests, but none of them were like, I want to move to a new city. I want to get away from my town. I want to try this new challenge. I was like pretty happy with, I guess, what you would look back at as like mediocrity, or like I was, you know, I was fine. Like I wasn't upset, but I wasn't like thrilled. And then they dragged me to all these colleges and I couldn't spell Casanova, so I can't go there. So there's all these other weird things. They're like, well, let's drive to this town and look at this school. And I didn't really get why, but I get like, my parents were like, you're going to college, whether you like it or not. And so I got on board, but there was never like, there wasn't excitement, but there also wasn't like me fighting it. I was just like, all right, I guess I'll do it. The person I am now is much different than that. Like, I enjoyed things, but I didn't really like weigh them and be like, well, what if I did this other thing and went to another town and really enjoyed that? Do you know what I mean? I kind of just like went with the flow a lot.
So how did you end up at the college you ended up at?
Oh, well, I ended up at SUNY New Paltz. I honestly have no idea. I remember we went and looked at a bunch of colleges. SUNY New Paltz, I think at the time, accepted like literally anybody that wrote a letter and said, can you come? Because the first year I got to college in 95, they were at like 130% capacity. They had over accepted everybody. And I think normally people say, no, thank you, I'm choosing another college. But everyone in New York had accepted. There were like three people stacked up sleeping in a storage closet, I remember, because they like literally didn't have dorms. So I got to college because they accepted me. And like a couple of my friends were like, I want to go to New Paltz. And they were smart people. And I was like, well, I guess this is a good choice. And they're going to be there. So that makes it easier. And it's an hour and a half away. So it's a little farther away, but it's not so far away. And I don't think I had a lot of options, which looking back, I think it worked out really, really well. But I didn't, again, like I was kind of indifferent to, all right, well, it's going to be more school. Nobody told me like, there's going to be girls on your floor in your dorm and your parents won't be there. Like they didn't sell it correctly. So I was just kind of like indifferent. It's close enough, but it's far enough. And a couple of friends will be there. Do you know what I mean? And I didn't have any interest in like a major or like what I wanted to do. They were just like, go try a different school. So I went to another school. Like I'd been in school my whole life. So it just seemed like that's what you're supposed to do.
And then college ended up being huge for you. It changed a lot. Yeah. There was a big unlock during that period of your life. Do you think that New Paltz itself and the people you were with and the environment was key to that? Or do you think this was just your time and it was going to happen?
Yeah, I think it was a little of my time when I realized like, oh, you could just leave your dorm room and go eat. And like your mom's not telling you to do all these other things first. There was like a little freedom that unlocked, right? But also I didn't know you had to like pay a phone bill and go down to the bursar's office and give him a check. Like there was a freedom of good things and freedom where I was like, what do you mean I have to pay, I have to write you a check? I don't know how to do that. So I was kind of unprepared. But there was also, New Paltz is interesting because it's halfway between Albany and New York City, right? So I grew up in Albany. I was exposed to a lot of different kids. I grew up with like a lot of hip hop, but hip hop from like the West Coast and the East Coast and even like some British stuff and New York and different things. But when you get to New Paltz, literally like the first day, everyone had their dorm doors open and there's so much hip hop blasting from every single room, which was like comforting and welcoming. But there's also kids from like Staten Island and Long Island and the Bronx and Brooklyn and all these accents and all these backgrounds and personalities that I'd never experienced. So that was jarring, is the negative way to say it. I don't know the positive word of jarring. It was like exciting in these people listen to the same music I listen to, but now there's new stuff, right? And their doors are open and they're welcome and they play Sega Genesis. And it was all the things that like I had done, but like my sister didn't do. And some of my friends did, but they also had to go to their AP classes. Like these kids were all doing the same things I was doing. So I did feel like welcomed in a way that I don't think I really appreciated right away. And I didn't understand that like I would fit in better. Is this what you're looking for? I'm not sure if I'm going down the right path with your questions here, so.
Yeah, no, this is great.
Okay.
So the last time we spoke, you told me that in college you learned that you learned differently. And I'm just wondering how that came about.
Right. So I got to college and I was like, I don't know, I'll be academic and whatever happens to happen. So my advisor was a history teacher. She'd written books on like Queen Elizabeth. And she was like, well, why don't you take a bunch of history courses? And I was like, sure, because like, so what? So I took a lot of history courses, but that requires a lot of reading books, which I had not thought that I was not great at. I didn't think that through. And also like writing a lot of papers. And I wasn't great at like writing papers because you have to like read and organize stuff. So in college, I realized I don't have to learn the way that I was taught. And I don't have to just figure out how to fit into the way that the teacher said, this is how you take notes and this is how you make an outline. I kind of realized like, oh, when I wrote my first paper, I made a bunch of little paragraphs of things. And this was like right when computers were starting to be, it was like 95, right? So the computers were still clunky and the printers were still really loud. So I wrote it all by hand and then I cut it up and I made all these little sections and then I typed it up and then I made all these little sections and I copied and pasted and moved them around. And nobody had ever told me to do that before. And I was like, oh, I can just learn the way that works for me. And then I started taking more notes and realizing, all right, well, for me to be able to work at the same pace as everybody else, I need to take twice as many notes and study them twice as hard and reorganize them twice as hard. But I can also do it in like the format that works for me. So I started writing in different ways. I started taking tests from the last page forward. And for some reason that tricked my brain into thinking like I was less stressful. but it was like undoing all the things I had been taught. So I realized like I needed to learn a way I hadn't been taught, and that I also needed to like hustle harder to be able to keep up with everybody and study more, study like right up until the last second. If there's a paper that's due or a project, I had to start way earlier. I couldn't just do it like the last minute, like all my other AP friends did. They just throw stuff together and it'd be fantastic. And I'm like, let me try that. And then it would not get done. In college, I realized like, oh, I just have to do it earlier. I have to work harder. And then I'll be at their same level. I wasn't, you know, I didn't become like an A student, but I felt more comfortable. I felt less stressed knowing that, all right, I have a plan and a process that works for me. And I took, it was slow, right? It was like an evolution. It was like an erosion of getting rid of those old ways to find the way that worked for me. And there also weren't like my parents and teachers standing over me being like, this is the way you have to learn. They were like, just get it done however you get it done, which is maybe the first real world thing I guess I experienced without like a parent helping me or wanting to help me or forcing to help me, right? And I could get it done. I just had to do it my own way. And that's something that's really stuck with me like all the way up until like now. If something's not clicking at work, I'm like, well, maybe I'm just approaching it the way that they want me to. Maybe I just need to step back and approach it the way that I think will work for me. And maybe that's different every time. But having that realization made it easier to say, all right, well, it's not that I didn't fit in. It's that I just didn't get what they were trying to, the way they were trying to get me to do it. Right?
Yeah.
Did that answer your question? I feel like this is a little bit of like a job interview. Like, did that answer your question?
It absolutely did. Or should I just
show myself out?
Yeah. I mean, like, I love that, you know, this was a big freedom moment for you. So I feel like college opened up a lot in terms of, you know, meeting other people and getting to feel like you fit in a way you hadn't before. But it also just gave you the permission to come at things your own way, which has now served you your entire life.
Yeah. And my kids are in a Montessori school, which when we toured, I didn't know anything about private schools or Montessori schools, but like we went to get like a, I don't know if you know about like getting daycare, but getting daycare, you have to do it like before you even meet your partner because you have to do it 100 years ahead of time. So we were looking for a place to put our toddler, and there was a Montessori school down the street, and they started telling us about how they teach the kids with like physical tactile tools and in different methods. And then they also meet the child where they need to be met, right? It's not every kid sits in a desk, every kid looks forward, every kid listens to the lecture, every kid goes home and does the homework. It was like, if this kid is better at math, we're going to use math to teach them English. And even like as I took the tour, I was like, well, this is what I needed in high school. Like, why didn't I have a cube that taught me that five to the third power is 5 cubed, because there's a cube with 5 by 5 by 5 sides. Like, there was just things that clicked. And I realized like that's what I was missing from high school. That's what I've kind of figured out on my own. I needed a different way to learn. But there's a whole method that exists already for people like me who didn't get it. But you know, we didn't know that. Nobody knew that. I mean, Maria Montessori knew it, but like my family didn't know that. So I kind of just like stumbled backwards into it. But it started to make everything that I'd struggled with make sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That it's just a different way for different people. And now understanding that as like a parent makes it way easier to be like, hey, my son needs this way, but my daughter needs it a different way. And by the way, like maybe their friends need it a different way, so I'm not going to treat them all the same, which I feel like as kids in the 90s, they just taught us all the same, treated us all the same, whether it was good or bad, right?
Yeah, I wonder how universal this was, because I mean, I'm pretty sure Maria Montessori started her schools a long time ago. Like, I know they didn't, yes. I'd never heard of them, and I, you know, grew up in Buffalo, so not that far away, but I wonder if there were, like, kids in California that had this amazing opportunity that I know I also was taught to sit in a desk and learn the exact same way as everyone else.
Yeah, Montessori is interesting because they have Montessori up through, like, kindergarten or first grade in a lot of places. A lot of adults I meet now that are in like the Montessori world or have met other Montessorians went to a Montessori school until like first grade, and then there was no school that went beyond that. Our school is lucky enough to go to eighth grade, which is awesome because it really like prepares the children to be adults. earlier, but that didn't exist. Even if like you went to first grade, you probably don't remember you went to like a Montessori first grade, right? Like you wouldn't know that was different than a public school first grade until you realize like, oh, the way I organize information maybe is different than the kids who just sat in a chair and stared forward. So it makes me feel good that there's an option out there different than what I had. As much as I enjoyed high school for certain things, it like the academic stuff never felt right, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad for that too. But I'm glad that you also like sort of had this awakening in college. So you found that you learned differently, you found your process, you found you have to hustle harder and you're okay with that. But you also had this whole sort of all these new people, all this new music, and the passion that you had for hip hop, I feel like exploded at this time too.
I love when you say hip hop.
Hip hop?
Yes. So I had a high school friend that became my roommate in college, and he's like, we should be on the radio station. And I was like, cool, that sounds fun. So we got on the radio station, which means like you're on the AM station in the student union and we're playing hip hop records and nobody can hear it except for the people like in the cafeteria. I don't even think they could hear it. So we were goofing around, and then the AM station's next to the FM station, but you need to get an FM license from the federal government to be on an FM station. So it was like very grown up and serious, but we would like peek our heads in and see what's going on. And two things happened at the radio station. So one, there was all these other people who were like into the music I liked, or different music, and like producing it, right? Like making this different kinds of music. And I remember going into like the FM studio, and there was this guy, Kenny Boo, there's two turntables and a mixer, and he was blending some songs and started scratching and he's mixing the songs. And I had, you know, heard that growing up, and I'd kind of gotten into like hip hop mixtapes, but I had never like seen somebody do this. I was never like exposed to that stuff like live, in an almost informal way. And I remember watching this guy and being like, well, if he can do it, like I want to do it. And there's not a lot of things like before that in my life where I was like, I want to do that, that's for me, you know, other than like Sega Genesis, but that was just me by myself. So then I got really into the radio station, and I started doing like production assistant and helping people like make bumpers and commercials and stuff like that. Because if you have a radio show, you have to make a commercial for your radio show. And they taught you like how to like do a musical bed and how to talk into a microphone, all this stuff, right? And it was a lot of kids helping kids, which was cool. So the other cool thing that happened at the radio station was I became like assistant music producer, helping people make commercials. And this was in the time when you would make your commercials on a reel-to-reel, which is like if you take a cassette tape and took all the tape out, it was that, but gigantic. And it's like how Led Zeppelin made their songs. So, but we had to like make a commercial on a reel-to-reel. You had to slice it with a razor blade. You had to like mark it with this China mark. It was ridiculous. And then you'd record it on an 8-track tape. And then they play that like every 6 hours, like come listen to Chris Solomon's radio station. So that was like the standard in 1995. But there was a computer in the music production room, which had this brand new thing nobody had ever seen before, which was like layers of music that you could produce today. And now you can get free apps on your phone that can do it a million times better. But back then it was so new and foreign. So I asked this kid, Tim, I was like, how do you do that? And he's like, come in, I'll show you. He showed me how to do it. And I was like, well, how can I get this on my computer? And he just put in a floppy disk and copied the software. And I took it back to my dorm and I started just making music and figuring out how to produce and like what panning left and right was and how do you do different layers and how do you make things sound deep. And I realized I just confessed to stealing software from SUNY New Paltz. So I'm sorry, guys. I didn't, it wasn't intentional, but it made me feel fulfilled. So I think like what I got out of that was A, there's this hip hop thing that I've always liked, but now I realize like I can kind of be part of that. Being on the radio, I could probably start scratching if I practiced, and that I could produce music, and producing stuff came really easily to me, which I don't think I ever had anything before that came easily. I could, you know, when you're young and you like, you hear music everywhere and you want to be creative and make stuff, like it all just fit together on the computer. I'm terrible at instruments. Like I spent 6 months trying to learn how to play one song and you don't want to hear it. It's really bad. It's the worst on guitar. But on a computer, I could organize it the same way I kind of organize my papers, all these little snippets. And then at some point you figure out, like, this is the beginning and the middle and the end, and then this would be a good part here. And that, like, just worked for me. Like, it made sense. And people, like, came to me to, like, make music for their, like, student fashion shows and stuff. And I was like, you sure you want me to help you? And it was, like, the thing that I was, like, good at and proud of, and people looked to me for it, and I helped them produce their commercials for their radio station, and I got an FM license, and I was on the air. I had all these radio shows, which were probably, nobody still heard, but it was easier for me, and therefore, like, enjoyable, and I wanted to grow, and I wanted to get better at it. And I don't know if I don't think I ever had that before that, really. And I think I've rarely had it since then.
That's amazing. Like, let's, you found your thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And finding my thing, like, made everything else, all the other stress, like, quieter. Right? Mm. Even, like when I started, like, when I found my wife, well, she had a boyfriend. But when I found her, I got rid of the boyfriend. Like, that wasn't so stressful because I knew, like, I have this thing that I'm good at in life. So that's done. I figured that out. Let me go figure out this girl thing, right? Let me go figure out this job thing. The music thing made me feel like, okay, well, I figured part of life out, even if it's not something that I do for a living. I don't do that for a living. I do IT work. But it did, like, it quieted a lot of the other stresses and made things, like, more approachable, I guess, because I had figured that out.
Totally get that. I don't know that everyone gets to find a passion in life. And especially as someone who has struggled up until then to, you know, have anything ever come easily. It's something that you love and it came easily. It's got to be like a revelation.
Yeah, it was. And you don't really know it at the time. But like probably by the end of college, I was like, wow, like, this is the thing. Like, if you're meant to be here for one thing. And this is, like, obviously before I had kids and got married and stuff. I'm like, this is the thing I'm meant to be here for. Like, good for me. Now let me go get a bunch of temp jobs and make minimum wage and all that other stuff that happens. But, like, even that, I have all my temp jobs. I would, like, listen to music and I would take notes and I'd go home and I'd bake mixtapes. And I was like, it gave me, like, a goal for the day and for the month and for the year that I would, like, work towards that I enjoyed, you know?
Yeah. How did you have the good sense not to go into this as a career, which, you know, obviously as an adult, you understand that that runs the risk of, you know, ruining the thing you love most in the world. But as a kid, you don't know that.
I like that you think it was good sense.
I do.
Well, I don't know. Like, I got out of college and I moved home and, like, I was living with my parents and their business was having problems. And then eventually my mom got sick. So there were a lot of reasons to stay home and be with my family. But I mean, honestly, 50% of that was probably like being scared to like I lived in Albany and I lived in New Paltz. I don't know how to move to Manhattan and just make music for a living. Right. Like, I didn't, that seemed ridiculous to me, and not in like nobody could ever do it, in like an impractical way. Like, I had always had jobs. I've always had, like, there was a point in college where I had like 8 or 9 jobs at the same time, because like, that's what you did. Like, I was just taught you work. And it didn't seem like pursuing music was like a job where you would have steady work and you could build a foundation of something. Right. Which I was okay with. I didn't see it like that. I saw it as like something I really enjoyed, and maybe even working with that would tarnish it. But I did, like, when I got to Albany, I became part of this small record label, and we flew to Chicago for some grant award competitions. Like, I did some music things. I was on like B95.5 playing the Lisa Gibbons Top 40 because I thought I could get into the radio station there. Like, I tried to do some of that, but none of it like really fit, and it was always weird, and it wasn't like the part I enjoyed about it. So I guess the good sense is that I didn't want to tarnish it, but also my dad said I had to get a job, so I got a lot of jobs.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes perfect sense. And maybe on some level you understood like that it would tarnish it, because you see that story so many times. And I mean, are you still doing producing or DJing or engaged with music?
Well, Sarah, thank you for asking that question. Yeah, I mean, I listen to so much music all the time. Like, I wish Spotify had been around when I was a kid. Like, memorizing one tape, because that's all I had, was awesome. But being exposed to so many different kinds of music all the time. Like, I listen to so much different music. It's like, it's overwhelming and I can't stop, right? And I love it because I listen to the different layers and the different beats and the different production things. So I enjoy it like nonstop all the time. But yeah, I try to like learn how to play guitar. I'm not great at that. I lucked out and bought some Technique turntables for really cheap a long time ago, and I've kept them, and a couple of years ago, maybe during COVID, I was like, I'm gonna get good at scratching. I was never really good at scratching. I was good at like mixing songs. Like if you go to a wedding and the DJ mixes two songs together, I could do that. That wasn't so hard. But I was like, I'm gonna get really good at like scratching, and I'm pretty decent. I don't think anybody should ever, I'm not gonna load it to YouTube, because I'm not really there yet. So that's probably still the 50% of like, well, it's silly and who's gonna like it, and it tarnishes it because it's just for me. But I got like decent at this thing that I always wanted to be good at, just like you could practice guitar. But for some reason, the scratching made sense, right? And also, like, I make music on my phone all the time, like every kid can do now. But it's stuff that I've thought about for 20 years. Like, it would be great if I could just loop this one in excess piece and put it under this Dr. Dre beat. But there's no technology to do that, and I'm not going to play at a computer all day because I have a job and wife. And now I can do that on my phone while I'm waiting for my son to have like baseball practice. Like it's, which is awesome to get your ideas out, even if I don't put them somewhere. It's like it gives me like that thing that I want, so I feel good about the purpose that I have, right? And then I go pick up my son from baseball and do all that other stuff that you have to do. But yeah, I'd sprinkle it into like every single day in some way, which is so wonderful. And it's, I assume like most things that people end up being good at, like if you're good at pottery, it's probably tough to like make a vase every single day, right? But maybe you do a little bit of like, I'm gonna think about this thing, I'm gonna go to the next level, I'm gonna try this next step. I guess it's probably the same thing like that, but it's easier now because we have phones and there's music everywhere and you can just make anything you want, right? Which is fantastic. Like every single thing we have in our house, you can plug in and you can make a beat on for some reason. We bought a really fancy piano and it comes with like a whole drum kit. Like it's crazy. It's awesome, but wow. You can just make music everywhere.
It's really beautiful that you're still so connected with this and that it's not something that you feel like you have to share. I feel like that's something that is also of our generation that is really special, that we don't feel like we have to do everything for everyone. It can just be private. So I feel bad for the folks that don't understand like those private pleasures and passions and all of that.
Yeah, I don't understand how people want to make all this music or videos or whatever and share it like nonstop. Also because like when I make something, it's never perfect, right? I always am thinking and rethinking. Even when I hear like an NXS song, I'm like, well, why didn't they just do this? They could have made it better with this. I don't see how you can put something out there. Even like when you do this podcast, I would be so worried. I put it out there and be like, oh, I could have asked this question. I could have said it this way. Like that like eats away at me. So kind of saying that it's mine and I, you know, my wife listens to it, but they're kind of like, my family's like numb to it. They're like, we don't really care. That's nice that you like that thing, but it is kind of just mine, which I like, and it doesn't come with that judgment that will then shut it down and I'll never want to do it again. And that's all I'll think about the next time I do it, is I was so judged. And I honestly don't know how people do that. It scares me to death. But that's maybe just like how we grew up, right? And that these kids grow up differently, just sharing everything, which is cool. I wish I didn't have that fear of tarnishing the thing. But it's kind of nice to have that too. Like, it's just mine.
I agree. Like, it took me a very long time to be able to, I wasn't on social media before I started doing this, and to be able to put videos out. The one thing is I don't ever watch them. Like, similar to you, I can't sit there, and that's, I could never, because it would be the same thing. I would just be cringing at, why did I say that or not say that, or like, and put myself through it.
So you got over that hump of like, I'm gonna put it out there because that's gonna lead me to the next thing. But then you found a way to manage the eating away at you, maybe negative thoughts, maybe negative feedback, like you just don't make any room for that. You just put it out there and you move on to the next thing.
Well, yeah, because I recognize that I really want connection. I really want community, and I can't find my tribe without putting something out there. It's not like we can all just like go back to college and put our dorm rooms open, you know, like,
right.
Like yes. This is the digital dorm room. So I had resisted it for a long time. And then finally I'm like, I have to.
Yeah. It seems so natural for you, like knowing you for a long time, like this seems like your personality fits perfectly with, let's share who I am and engage others, right? So it's funny that you still have like that reservation in there. Does it get easier?
Reservation. It does. So I will say that. Like it started out as I had my certification and did nothing because I just could not get over it. It was a little paralyzing. Yeah. But then I, you know, really force myself to like either abandon the stream or go for it. But like this hemming and hawing is ridiculous. So yeah, I started doing it and it definitely gets easier. And I'm sure someday I'll watch one of these videos and I'm not there yet.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. When I was on the radio in college, you know, you're supposed to talk and say the call letters and you're supposed to talk up a song. And I did that for a little while. And then I was like, it's 1 to 3 a.m. Like, who cares? And I just started making like 2-hour mixtapes for myself. So I work on like songs and blending, but I was like, I'm not talking because I don't want to hear my voice ever, which is a weird thing for somebody who went into radio to do. But yeah. I would be listening back to a tape of my show and be like, wow, I did something I never did before. Like, this is good for me. And then my voice would come on and I would like, I don't want to hear it ever again. Right. Mm-hmm. So I made a conscious decision to not speak and nobody ever really caught me, which is good, I guess. But I was also like a little nervous, like they're going to throw me off the radio. The one thing that I'm enjoy at college, as like, it's my thing. So I don't think I could ever do that now. I don't know. I don't know how you shake that. So I'm very impressed that you just did it. You just close your eyes and do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think if the thing that you want on the other side is big enough, you would do it too, but you have found a way to engage with this privately that is doing a lot for you. So it's hard to imagine what that thing would be for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. And then like over the years you find like other artists that are kind of like that. Like Kid Koala is a big DJ. Like he's DJed for Jack Johnson and he's like remixed big albums and stuff. But I went to like a record release party of his and it was just a little thing in a bar and he came over and he talked to me about DJing for Jack Johnson. And I was like, well, you should probably get back to work. He's like, no, man, let's just hang out. Like, it seems like he's the same kind of person of like, I want to make this thing. I want to share it, but I don't want to share it so big that like it ruins it or that I have to change what I do. So I was like, all right, well, other people are kind of like this. And I felt, again, like you go to college and there's other people that like the same things you like. And I was like, oh, there's other professionals that do the same thing I do, think the same way I think. So I'm not like not having the thing the right way. I guess that was the worst sentence ever. But like, sometimes you're like, well, maybe I should share this. And just like, who cares if everybody's going to be mean to me and judge me. And then you see other people do it like, no, I don't like being judged either. Or like this, like, you're like, I don't want to be judged. I don't want to put it out there. And I'm like, okay, well then maybe I made the right choice for me. Right. And then maybe my kids will be different and they'll put everything out there because that's their generation and I won't understand it, but I will obviously consume it because it's fantastic. But it's something I think that I will never really get. But I mean, we probably don't get a lot of stuff our parents did. So it's just a different generation of like, I'm happy at the level of the thing that I have and how I appreciate it. And I can see that others have similar things. So that makes me also like appreciate, all right, well, I'm not alone in the way that I embrace music and live with it, right?
Oh, yeah. And everything's evolving so quickly. Like you were right at the forefront of this, you know, like the first time you could put it on computer and stuff like, I mean, that's huge. And, you know, we're opening up that next horizon with AI and, you know, I already feel like I'm 1,000 years old when I talk to a young person about AI. I can't even imagine, like, time marches on. I think, you know, what my takeaway from you is that you are you have created such a beautiful life for yourself and you're so sincere and transparent about this is my thing. This is what I love. Like, it's, it's really inspirational. And so I wouldn't change a damn thing you're doing. Like, you're doing a lot right.
I don't think anybody's ever called me inspirational, so thank you. I'm definitely, so now I'm going to cut that out and I'm going to post it everywhere so people can see that. Thank you.
Perfect. Make that, like, splice it onto a loop or something.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about music.
Yeah, that's cool.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much for talking to me today. I've definitely kept you longer than I said I would, and I really appreciate the conversation. You're just one of my favorite people to talk to, so it's been a delight for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so easy to talk to you, so thank you for having me. You have a lovely home. I really like your trees. It's great. No, this is really fun. Anytime I get to talk to you, it's fantastic, but this is kind of, it's fun to have like a little question-answer structure too, right? Because I feel like you and I go in so many different paths, and then we go away and I'm like, oh, I wanted to ask Sarah this or talk about this or go further on this. So it's kind of cool to have like a path, I guess, to talk to you with. We should do that. We should set agendas when we talk in the future.
Yes, let's do that. Well, thank you so much. Say hello to the family, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.